Welcome to the first ever episode of Squawker's brand new WSL-themed podcast. We'll be discussing all the things about game reviews, previous matches, any gossip, latest numbers on Frank Kirby's goal tally, you know, all the jazz, all the fun stuff. Unfortunately, I'm merely one part of the hosting team. It won't just be me you'll have to listen to. I'm joined by Harry Edwards. Harry, how are you?
I'm very, very good. Very, very excited that this is finally happening. How are you, of course?
Yeah, I'm excited as well. I mean, I think we see so many different women's podcasts coming to light in recent years, but I think such a big brand like Squawker, using their pool and using their stats, I think this has a potential to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's an exciting time in women's football, so it's good to get a bit more involved here.
Speaking of involved, seeing as we haven't really introduced ourselves to listeners, I mean, they might know us from other places, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you become involved in women's football?
So I was probably a bit of a slightly newer fan to women's football than most. Still, I was thinking back to maybe around 2014, I started really paying attention to Chelsea's women's team, but the coverage wasn't great, so it was hard. If you weren't going there week in, week out, it was hard to keep track of what's going on. So it was only really when it was getting pushed into the main news that you could see what was happening. How about yourself?
I think you're right. It has been a bit difficult to get women's football coverage, but I've had the opportunity to work at a lot of different places and get my foot in that way. The whole thing... with Squawker, actually, it was just me trying to find a platform where I could upload articles every now and then, and then it developed from there. And outside of that, I've got two other podcasts that I do outside of this one that are also based around women's football and women in the industry. I think it's important that we push as much as we can, not only, as you mentioned, in this time where things seem to be going really well for women's football and the coverage and the publicity is there, but also just to keep us on that upwards trend.
Yeah, and I think... the past couple of years, Squawker, we've been really good with what we've been doing. You know, with quite extensive coverage of the 2019 World Cup and the WSL from there. And now, you know, I used to do a couple of previews a year, focusing on the big matches and some match reports and other features. And last year, at the She Believes Cup, I did coverage match reports of the England games, and now I'm doing a weekly preview. Just short, but it's getting something done.
Yeah, consistency, I think, is the key with a lot of these things because, you know, while it's all now here and good to publish content for international tournaments, it's the domestic leagues and that kind of content that we need to kind of really drive. And speaking of international tournaments, we recently had one, and we're going to start by doing a quick review of it. And yes, we are talking about the 2021 She Believes tournament that was held a week ago across February. Yes, we mean February. And once again, won by the USA, and that was courtesy of a 6-0 rout of Argentina on the final day. Wow, like, they just seem to be going from strength to strength.
Yeah, they've really got an embarrassment of riches. You know, they had the most established squad there. Everyone knows, you know, going into the tournament, you only ever really expect USA to win, but they've still got to do it. They've still got to, you know, put on their best performances. And... personally, if we're just quickly looking over it as a whole, I didn't think that they were great, but they know how to win, you know, and that's what puts them on another level to so many different countries and national teams. They have that instilled in them, that winning mentality.
And you spoke briefly there of the embarrassment of riches. Like, we know of players, we know of Morgan, of Lavelle, of Mewis, of players like Carly Lloyd, but actually it was another player whose revival and resurgence we saw across the tournament, and that's Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. The other day, taking it quickly outside of women's football, I saw Zlatan Ibrahimovic say, talking about LeBron James, that he should stick to sport and not politics. But I think Megan Rapinoe is a perfect example of how you can do both. She's obviously brilliant on the pitch, but she also uses her platform off it to promote so many good things. And I think it's a... She does give the perfect marriage of the both.
Especially on the football pitch that we saw her score goals, her confidence in front of goal, and just under Ratka and Andonovski in general, she seems to be really thriving. And she's part of a team that are now undefeated in 37 games. I think that kind of tells you how much dominance they have in the game, the kind of juggernaut they are to be able to go through games, game after game. And as you mentioned, in the actual tournament, they had a lot of difficult games. They struggled against Canada. They had a very late goal, courtesy of Lavelle. In against Brazil, they were kind of pushed and challenged, and they did win that one 2-0, but they found it difficult to push through. So I think that aspect of it is interesting. But like you said, we always expected them to win. The other teams put in pretty positive performances, but it seems like there's absolutely nothing to take away from the team in general. Now they must be looking ahead to think how they can build on this for the Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah, I think on the tournament as a whole, you probably can't draw too many conclusions from the other teams because there were so many different variables going around missing players for certain reasons. I mean, if you just look at Canada for a second, you know, they were without Khadisha Buchanan, one of the best defenders. You know, they're Ashley Lawrence, Jordan Huytema, and, you know, Christine Sinclair, who just happens to be the all-time top international goalscorer. She was injured. I'm not saying that they'd have given USA a run for their money, but it's only on USA that you can say this is where they're at. I think they were probably closest to their full strength out of all the teams. And like you said, it is a very exciting time for them with the Olympics coming up to see, you know, can they extend that dominance once again?
And it's interesting to know, like you mentioned, there were quite a few teams to discuss. So Japan was another team that pulled out before the tournament because obviously there were pandemic restrictions in place. But a team that we didn't see this year was England. And whilst they weren't in the competition, they were doing a lot of interesting things outside of it, weren't they?
Yeah, So, as we mentioned, that England, I was doing an England She Believes coverage last year, and that was Phil Neville's last tournament, and now we're in the, albeit brief, we're in the Hegariza era, and it was a really good performance. I think, you know, we had 6 goals, an Ellen White hat-trick, 4 debuts, mm-hmm. Ebony Salmon, Lotte Wubbenmoy, Ella Toon and Sandy McKeever, and I think, yes, Northern Ireland, you know, they're not at England standards. I think if we were to compare it, it would be like the USA playing Argentina. You know, there's the gulf in quality, and Northern Ireland are also missing players as well for various reasons. But yeah, it was a very good performance. The only negative was just the coverage of it. I don't know whether whether people listening would have seen the coverage on Twitter, but. Now, off the top of my head, I can't remember which goal it was. It might have been Ellen White's second, which might have been the second of the game as well. Lucy Bronze put the cross in, image cut out. Just about to hit Ellen White's head, image cut out. And it was shaky. We're all very grateful for there to have been coverage of it. But in 2021, you know, we kind of want more for the women's team. Mm. You know, not just tucked away on the iPlayer or the red button at, you know, lunchtime on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that kind of standard picks up, because as you say, it's all well and good to be doing that in international tournaments, but we definitely want to be picking that up for other games too, especially when the interest is there. I'm sure there are countless numbers of how many people were watching the game, and it's always been quite high each time, so there's no excuse really. Let's wrap up this segment by just quickly discussing the Tokyo Olympics, which I briefly mentioned earlier. Megan Rapinoe was quoted saying that the USA women's national team were going to train as if it was happening. And we know there's been a lot of speculation around whether it will go ahead.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think we were speaking recently when we were putting the initial thoughts together on this and behind the curtain, just like planning far ahead. And it was like, okay, so in the summer, we've got the Olympics that we can cover. But do we have the Olympics to cover? You know, I think obviously we can't put too much blame on anyone really. These are unprecedented times. Things look to be getting a bit better, but obviously we're just looking at one country. It's got to be better all around the world, and I think Rapinoe's right. You know, we should all be preparing both players and fans and staff and coaches and everyone in women's football. I think should be preparing for it to happen, but until, you know, the first game kicks off in, I think, towards the end of July, we're not, I don't think we're truly certain that it's actually happening, which is not what you want.
Yeah, and that's the uncertainty. I think, I guess we're just going to have to roll with it, because the nature of the current world at the moment with the pandemic and just football in general, you never know what's going to happen. So I think it's interesting to think that teams are definitely going to be have to adapt their training and their approach towards it. But it will be interesting to see also it go ahead and how it might be managed, especially within the pandemic. I think at that stage, there will be a lot of vaccinations going on. But again, you just never know how it will unfold. So that's one thing to look ahead of. And it kind of gives us a perfect segue to move in from there to our next segment, which is looking at the Champions League roundup this week, because there are quite a few interesting matches on show.
Yeah, it's kind of snuck up on us. There was a big gap between the end of the previous round and the draw being made. It was a few months anyway. But then as soon as, I think it's only been maybe 2 weeks since the draw that we're now, you know, these next 2 weeks, we've got both legs of the last 16, and you know, still two English teams in the competition.
That's the thing, though. Like you mentioned, I think, for example, one of the games, Chelsea Atletico Madrid, Chelsea haven't played since Valentine's Day, and that game is on the 3rd of March. Again, it's like Man City playing Fiorentina. They haven't played for a while either, so there has been a very big gap. You kind of wonder how this will impact the performances of the teams, whether or not it will cause managers to rotate, especially when I think that there's a round of WSL games only 4 days after. And we know that the WSL is getting more and more intense, especially with Chelsea at the top.
Yes, yeah, it's a strange gap between an international break and the Champions League, if you think. Just putting it up from a She Believes Cup perspective, you had players playing on Wednesday night, so early hours, Thursday morning, England time, but then expecting them to get back used to the English time zone and then be playing high-level football within a matter of days. I know Man City, they've got a game this weekend, or they're depending on when it's come out, they've had the game, so we can kind of know where they're at. But I think it's still such a quick turnaround that we might not get the best quality of games, especially when there's so much at stake.
The other interesting to note is that both the teams, the English teams, Chelsea and Man City, they've pretty much blown away their opponents in previous rounds. We're looking at aggregates of 8 goals and more. And we know that both the teams possess quite a rich attacking squad. But then we look at the opponents, which is Atletico Madrid and Fiorentina, and those are teams that are not just very sort of compact in their formations, especially Madrid, but also they press quite a lot. And that's something that I think Chelsea and Man City have struggled with. Man City in specific, because they often don't have a press. It's quite easy to play through them. And I've noticed that quite a lot.
Yes, it's a strange system they've got, and it'll be interesting to see how it matches up. But I think if looking at the Chelsea game for a minute, Atletico Madrid, they are, you know, one of Spain's big two women's teams. I know we've got Real Madrid coming up, but they're not the established side that Barcelona and Atletico are. But it's not quite happening for them this season. You know, they are still a very good team. You know, they've got players that we all know. They've got Tony Duggan, they've got Dana Castellanos, they've got former Chelsea goalkeeper Hedvig Lindahl, but you know, they're fourth in their league, so I think there's a bit of uncertainty. They're still, you know, they're going to cause Chelsea a lot of problems, but they're not, you know, if it was Atletico Madrid 2 years ago, maybe even last year, I think they'd be a bigger problem to Chelsea than they are. But, you know, this is women's football. Anything can happen, as the past few weeks of the WSL have shown us.
Not interesting, I think, is, like you mentioned, they don't have consistent form in the league. Like, they, you know, they win against Sevilla and they lose 1-0 against Santa Teresa, something like that. There's no consistency. However, when I was watching the Champions League performances, because they recently played Chenhua's, they won 9-2 of aggregate, which, you know, fairly comfortable scoreline. It was interesting to see the formation. It was quite a rigid 4-4-2 formation, but the attackers seemed to have free license to do whatever they wanted. Like Ludmila and Castellanos, they were like absolutely pressing and hounding, and they were everywhere. They were straying on the flanks, they were in the middle of the pitch, they were up front in the box. That's one thing I think Chelsea found quite difficult, because historically this season, and then I know that we've developed and our wing backs have become stronger, those are the areas which we've struggled in. I keep saying we. I think the important thing is how will Emma Hayes' team set up against them, and knowing that they will probably thrive in the areas that we're where the team are pretty susceptible.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've seen with Chelsea this season, on certain occasions, they've had a lot of problems breaking down and getting through those packed defences, even with all the starters they've got. And then defending at the minute, we're unsure whether Millie Bright's actually, you know, whether she's available. She's part of a back four that's practically unchanged, apart from a few Conte Cup games. Emma Hayes has her favourite back five, if you include the goalkeeper. If Bright's taken out of that, I'd assume Sophie Ingle put in. Ingle's a brilliant player, but there's not that chemistry between her and Eriksen that Bright has, and I think that could cause Chelsea some problems.
The other thing is that the other option would be to play back three, but when we did that. When Chelsea did that against West Ham, and I think Maria Theresa's daughter was playing in the back three, it was absolute chaos. Like, when Millie Bright isn't there, it seems as if everything is just sort of, like, in the air. Nobody knows what's happening. It's mental back there. That's the thing that's worrying. Like, if one of our centre-backs, whether it's Bright or Eriksen, one of them is taken out, it seems that we struggle to cope. And if that's a problem in terms of central defence, we're going to struggle against the likes of Ludmilla and Duggan. Because those are players that are very interchangeable in their positions and they appear everywhere. You need to man mark them. You can't allow complacency. And I think it's interesting because it's something that we do so seamlessly in our midfield and attack. How can we possibly navigate that at the back if we're without our key players?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Magdalena Eriksson is a brilliant defender. But I think if Chelsea had to pick one centre-back to miss for a game, I think they'd rather have Millie Bright in the team than Eriksen. I don't know what it is about her, but she just brings, like you said, she brings something to this team. She fills the gap. She covers brilliantly for the very attacking fullbacks. I know she got help from the midfield, but I think she's the big presence.
The thing is, she contributes a lot to attacking passes by doing those crossfield balls, and she's very confident with the ball at her feet. She can dribble very easily out of defence. She can pass easily through into the midfield. That kind of confidence when there's a high press, I think, is something that not a lot of players, at least in defensive positions, are able to emulate, and I think that's what makes her so special.
Yeah, I think she can very much be Emma Hayes's plan B. If plan A of overloading the attack isn't working, you've got Bright to, like you said, to send the balls over to, you know, the likes of Sam Kerr, Beth England, Pernille Harder, Frank Kirby when she's fit. You know, that's, I think Chelsea will miss that as well if she doesn't get back in time, which is women's football. You don't know about injuries. There's not the coverage. All we know is that she dropped out of the England team.
Yeah, it's a shame that you know, you're not quite sure what's happened or how long they'll be out for. Especially when you know there are games coming up now. I think in recent fixtures, Chelsea, like other WSL teams, have played pretty much every 3 days or every 4 days. See, there's such an influx of games going on, and it's similar to the men's side. You know, I have to wonder how fit these players will be to be able to play in midweek Champions League games and then again on the weekend, especially when the actual domestic league has just as much as a value in terms of what's happening in the top three as Champions League standings.
Yeah, obviously Champions League's the aim for Chelsea, but you know, they won't want to concede the lead as well because they got themselves into a good position. And I know, like, Man City are close on the heels and Man City are doing brilliantly, or they were before the international break. So it really is probably less comfortable than Chelsea fans would have liked it. But I think Emma Hayes is one that she'll thrive on this, and so will the players. And I think Man City, looking at their game there, I think they'll be happier with their draw. Because I think the past couple of seasons they've been knocked out or certainly gone up against Atletico Madrid and were knocked out by them last season, if I remember rightly. So they'll be happy to avoid them. But I think they've also got the more favourable draw of the two English teams.
Yeah, I suppose the one thing about playing against Fiorentina is like we mentioned, which said he might sort of struggle with not having that press in play. They'll definitely be given the space to play forward. And like we mentioned, there's no qualms in terms of how good their attack is. They've got players like Lavelle and Mewis and up front Ellen White. And it's that sort of channel of attack through to them. And just like Chelsea, the attacking team is very interchangeable, and I think that's what makes it so difficult to play against them. Unless you've got, you know, you've got a midfield pivot like Melanie Leopold and G like Chelsea do, which is something that's affected City in the past. You have to wonder how much Fiorentina are going to be able to do that, and also whether they'll be able to sustain it over the game.
Yeah, I think you, like you said, the way that Man City's attack can change. I mean, just look at Georgia Stanley, where she can play pretty much anywhere in that front line, and even quickly looking back to England in midweek, she was playing in almost like a defensive midfield role alongside Jill Scott. And I know that's not her Man City role, but it shows just how good she is. And then you've got Lauren Hemp, who's still young, but she's in the form of her life right now. And, you know, against Fiorentina, defence that aren't doing too well in the league either, I can't see anything more than Man City getting through it and putting their spot in the next round. Obviously, it's over two legs as well, but I think it's over those two legs that both the quality for both Man City and Chelsea will get them ahead.
I suppose the only thing that we can say, and I mentioned it briefly before, is once you get past the City press, it's pretty much a free-for-all. And, you know, if you've got the talent, you've got a chance of sort of causing some damage to Ellie Roebuck's goal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think you have to praise Man City for the work they've got, but as teams have shown in the past, they can be got at, you know. And also depends on how Dal Kempa, how she comes back from, you know, having been at the Sheep Leaves, whether, you know, she started all right, started well for Man City. But again, I think for them, it's all about the momentum and how this break has affected it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's something that we need to keep an eye on as well. Of course, we're going to make sure that we inform everyone of all the injury news as it comes out. But as we mentioned, it's quite difficult to do that at the moment, and not just because we're recording at a pretty interesting time of the week, also because news isn't always sort of something that you get as often as you do in the men's side of the things. But in saying that, I'm now going to ask you to pick either a team, a match, or a player in this sort of fun little segment to close things off that you want to keep an eye on in the upcoming games. Something that you just think, well, this is something that we should monitor because this could be pretty cool.
Well, I'm going to be probably a bit boring and say I want to be keeping an eye on Guro Wrighton. You know, she's...
Oh, that's not boring. That's cool. Who doesn't love Guro Wrighton?
But she's, you know, I'd put my neck on the line and say she was Chelsea's best player last season. She was the sign-in of last season. But this season, she's not really been there in the league. Not for any fault of her own, but I think with the attacking stars that have come in, you know, there's just more people for her to fight with for a space, and it's not a battle that she's winning. But in the Champions League, you know, in two games against Benfica in the last round, you know, she had five assists, three in one game and two in the other. And I know some were giving her a fourth in the first, but having recently gone through the goals, it is five, which is still... You know, five assists in 180 minutes is ridiculous. And I think especially if Kirby is unfit and doesn't make it, I think Wrighton's the natural replacement for that attack, you know, playing behind Sam Kerr and in line with Harder. And I think this is her stage.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like you mentioned, it's unfortunate that she doesn't get enough game time. And it's, like you said, it's just the nature of the current squad. Emma Hayes is playing the strongest starting 11, and unfortunately Guro Wrighton is just missing out on that. But she's possibly quite possibly the best fringe player that Emma Hayes has. Like, and even would you consider her as a fringe player? She just happens to not be in the squad. It's not just her crossing, though, her passing. I think her passing skills and her link-up play with John Anderson often. She's just very in tune with things, and I think that will be something that's quite important for the Chelsea midfield, especially coming up against a very slippery Atletico attack. Now, you mentioned Guro Wrighton. I'm going to go for something a little bit different, just to change things up. And I'm going to say that I would like to keep an eye out on the flank play of Manchester City, and that those players that play on the flank. I think that's important because unlike sort of other teams that play centrally, and I think that Chelsea are one of them, Man City's wing players often down and providing crosses from either side, and I think it's something that Chelsea has started to do through Pernille Harder, but I think that Manchester City have been doing it for a while. I think it's very interesting to see that. And as we mentioned, the Fiorentina defence, central defence especially, their league form has shown that they are often sort of struggling to mark players within the box. And you can imagine Giorgio Stanway putting in a cross or Ellen White being in the middle, and I think that's how it will go. And I think that those crosses and set pieces are something that you'll need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and that's even before you get the fullbacks involved. Now, once you get Greenwood and Bronze in on the act as well, it's not fair for the opponents.
So what are we expecting? Are we expecting another blowout performance? You know, 4 or 5 goals. What are the predictions? Let's start with the Chelsea Atletico Madrid game, because I think that one will be a little bit closer in terms of performance and scoreline.
Yeah, I personally think Chelsea will win, but definitely not as comfortable as the Benfica victory. I'd go for a slightly more narrow win. Still, I think winning both legs as well, but only by a couple of goals.
What we're saying, 2-1, 1-0, 3-2.
I'd say it really does depend on Bright. Maybe 3-0 over both legs. So a 1-0 and a 2-0 maybe.
I think that it's going to be a tough first game. Yeah, I know we're playing at the King's Meadow. They're playing home in the first game, but I think that will be a tough game. I think that will be 2-1, and then I think maybe they'll win the last game by 1 goal, especially playing away from home. I feel like the Man City game is going to be a little bit easier in terms of predicting scorelines. I'm expecting quite a few goals.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think it's going to be a lot more routine and very, very convincing, especially the form that they were in. You know, again, with the time that they're recording, it's all a bit, you know, it is a strange period, but I can't see them dropping off that much. I think the mentality of the squad is there still. Yeah, and I think it's going to be a fair few goals.
All right, I think that pretty much wraps everything up. Is there anything else you want to discuss before we close up?
No, I think, you know, just make sure both Chelsea and Man City games are on BT Sport this week. So if you get the chance, do watch it, because I think they're going to be brilliant games.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of attacking talent across both games. And it's exciting to think that the attacking talent in both teams will come together potentially for the Tokyo Olympics. So do keep an eye out on those games. Chelsea are playing at 7 p.m. I think on Wednesday the 3rd, and Man City are playing on
Wednesday as well on 5 o'clock. So you've got a double header.
Back to back. So if you've got nothing better to do, and really, why would you be when these games are on? You've just got to sit on the sofa, put on BT Sport, and enjoy the talent. So thanks for being part of history and tuning into episode 1 of Squawkers Women's Football Themed Pod. We'll have this episode probably up on Monday, and we'll have it across quite a few platforms. Apple, I think, Spotify, potentially SoundCloud. We will let you know. If you could drop us a like and share in the meantime when it's out, or, you know, a cheeky subscribe, we are sure the female football gods will be very pleased and the football will match. Until next week, see ya.